Hi there. This is a quick message that this podcast is general financial advice only, meaning it is not specific to you, your needs, goals, or objectives. We suggest you don't act on this information until you've spoken to your professional financial advisor. You'll find our full disclaimer, link to our financial services guide and website in the show notes below.
Welcome to the Invest in the Journey podcast. My name's Kieran Moore and I'm a portfolio manager at Munro Partners. And today what we're going to be discussing is the Q4 2023 results season. And so today I'm joined by Gene, Dan and Ben, who are the hardworking analysts here on the Munro investment team. Welcome, guys.
Hey, Kieran.
Hey, good everyone. To be here.
Hey, Kieran.
And so we're obviously going to get to the much anticipated NVIDIA result. And by the way, for any listeners out there, we've also got a separate podcast where Nick Griffin, our CIO, talks about the NVIDIA results specifically. So I would highly encourage you to listen to that. So Dan, we're going to come back to you right at the end.
Sounds good.
To talk about high performance computing. But firstly, we're going to go to Gene and Ben, where you're going to give us an insight into some of the other results. So when a company's reporting, your role is to effectively update the numbers, listen to the earnings call, and then help the portfolio manager really adjust the earnings forecast going forward. So this earnings season, what we were hoping for was to see the earnings acceleration in many of our areas of interest. In particular, two of our largest areas of interest, digital enterprise and high performance computing. And so, Gene, if we start with digital enterprise, that's our area focused on software companies, some of which we think can start monetizing this massive structural change, which is AI or artificial intelligence. And so if we start with Microsoft, one of the fund's biggest positions, Gene, do you want to take us through some of the key takeaways from that result?
Yeah, definitely. So Microsoft is one of the fund's largest positions and a core holding since the fund started in 2016. And as many people are aware, Microsoft is a champion of artificial intelligence. And we believe they can capitalize on this opportunity and grow its earnings from AI in really two ways. Firstly, through its Azure cloud computing business, which hosts a lot of the AI training and inference workloads. And secondly, through offering software applications such as Copilot, which allows Microsoft to charge a higher price for software that enhances productivity. In the most recent quarter, they once again demonstrated their leading position in Gen AI with not only revenues and earnings both exceeding expectations, but also one of the highlights being how fast the AI ramp is contributing to the acceleration in Azure growth.
Great. So since there's a massive focus from the market on the Azure product, do you want to take us through some of the growth that the company experienced in the quarter?
Sure. It was another exciting quarter of strong growth for Azure, driven by the demand in AI-related services. We saw them deliver just under 30% of growth, and management also gave really positive color on how big the AI boost was to the cloud infrastructure business, with it contributing 6 percentage points of growth, which ramped up from a base of 3% just a quarter ago. All of this, coupled with a positive guide on Azure, was really thesis confirming for us, in that AI demand is in fact accelerating, and we believe that Microsoft is only going to continue to monetize on this and gain share from here.
Great. So one of the keys there is obviously that Azure, through that business, AI is actually directly impacting their revenues right now today.
Exactly right. Whilst we remain bullish on the Copilot opportunity, we suspect it won't be needle moving in the near term. And another thing worth noting is beyond just seeing revenues reaccelerate as a result of AI, Microsoft also upgraded their operating margin guide for the year, which is really impressive given they're in a big AI investment cycle and is truly a testament to their cost discipline approach.
Great. And so if we move on to another big beneficiary of digital enterprise, which is ServiceNow, do you want to take us through that result and some of the key takeaways?
Yeah, so ServiceNow, being in our view another beneficiary of AI, is also capitalizing on the value AI brings to its workflow automation offerings, as well as the pricing power that comes with it. In the most recent quarter, they delivered impressive sales and profitability, which all came in ahead of expectations, but the main highlight was definitely around its strong RPO growth of 23%, which management flagged was fueled by AI.
And Jane, what do we mean by RPO growth?
RPO stands for Remaining Performance Obligations. It is a leading indicator for a company's future revenues. They essentially act like backlogs and is a metric that investors focus on for a software as a service company like ServiceNow, because it effectively represents the contracted dollars that clients have committed to spending with the company, which provides visibility into the recurring revenue run rate as well as a company's future earnings power. In this case, we can see AI is beginning to contribute to that backlog growth, which translates into that future revenue growth for ServiceNow.
Great. So overall, digital enterprise results were really strong in the quarter, and many of the theses that we're looking for, i.e. that AI starting to impact P&Ls, is actually coming through, which is great to see. So Ben, let's switch over to another one of our areas of interest, which is e-commerce. And let's start with the big bellwether in the space, which is obviously Amazon. And I know much of the investment community was focused on the AWS number. Do you want to give us a little bit of background as to why that's important and how it came in during the quarter?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess the market's been really focused on AWS, and that's really for two reasons. First, what we've touched on a lot in this podcast already is the structural thematic behind AI. And the second is the underlying margins that the business actually has. So just to put this in context, only 15% of the top line actually comes from AWS, but it accounts for over 50% of the operating margins. So AWS grew 13% in the quarter, which was about in line with what the street was expecting. And the way that they've guided, it sort of infers that we should see growth of 15 to 16% into early 2024. So the market was super positive about that.
Excellent. So when we talk about the optimization, really what that means is that over the last 12 months, what we've seen is AWS customers actually cut their spend a little bit and really refocus on their own P&L, which has impacted the growth of the business. And so that growth has now started to reaccelerate again, is what you're saying.
Yeah. So for a while, that was a headwind. And if you think, you know, through the macro backdrop and rising interest rates, there was obviously pressure in a lot of the tech space. So companies had to reduce their CapEx, and that just meant less funds were being allocated to the AWS suite.
And so one of the big things that we think about Amazon is obviously the margin upside to come that we think is going to drive the earnings over the next, you know, 3 to 5 years. Maybe just take us through how that margin is progressing and what sort of impact is the advertising business having here?
Yeah, so this is actually really interesting. And because AWS has become such a big focus, I think what the market's forgetting is how big the underlying e-commerce business is and where we can see those margins heading. And if you look under the hood, what you've seen is 7 consecutive quarters of operating margin expansion. And that's being boosted mainly from ad generation. But if you look even deeper beyond that, the e-commerce business is actually still break even. And back in 2018, pre-COVID, when you didn't have these sort of pressures from, you know, optimization and logistics, that was, you know, mid to high single digits in terms of profitability. So what we believe is even if you back out that advertising spend, there's a long runway to go for the e-commerce business. And the international part of that is actually even further behind than where the US is. So we think that, you know, like I touched on before, this is the majority of Amazon's top line. So if you start to see that margin really trickle through, it's going to be meaningful for, you know, the profitability of the company.
Great. So take away the high margin ad part of the business and you've got an e-commerce part of the business that's still got a lot of margin expansion potential to come.
Exactly right. And we're pretty excited about it.
Excellent. Okay. And if we stick with you, Ben, another stock that's come back into the portfolio in the last 12 months is Meta, which is obviously formerly known as Facebook. And so that stock had quite a nice pop on the day of the results. Can you explain to us what was going on there?
It did. So I guess Meta or Facebook has been one of these stories that's been beaten up quite a bit. And if you take a step back, you know, 18, 24 months, this was a company that its revenues were shrinking and they had to optimize their costs. So that just meant, you know, a lot of headcount reductions and the market couldn't really work out, you know, where Meta was going. It couldn't see the investment thesis and it couldn't see the growth trajectory. But what we're seeing now is through Reels, which is effectively their, I guess, competitor to short form videos against TikTok, which they've utilized in Instagram, is really driving the ad spend. And that's growing really, really quickly and accelerating the top line. So what you're seeing is this cost normalization, but then the top line accelerating really quick.
Great. So you've effectively got a re-engagement with the platform and I think everyone listening would know anecdotally that they're using or watching Reels a lot more in their everyday lives. But you've also got a cost optimization story. So they're still reducing costs, aren't they?
They are, yes. So they're starting to see more and more leverage come through that. And I guess where they are allocating the capital is, again, into GPUs to drive their AI growth. So if you look at they spend $7 billion on H100, which is NVIDIA's latest GPU or graphic processing unit chip. And what that's helping to do on the advertising side is just make ads more relatable and, you know, get better impressions for end users. So that's driving ad growth and it's driving the end consumers to purchase more items.
Yeah, excellent. So that's really powerful. So what we're actually talking about here is not actually an enabler of AI. So Meta is a beneficiary of AI, i.e. spending on NVIDIA product to therefore generate top line growth or revenue growth.
That's exactly right. And the other thing here that's actually really exciting that the market sort of neglects is the Reality Labs component of the business. So this is something that's losing $4.7 billion a quarter. So $17 billion a year, just to put that in context, which is for even a business like Meta, that's a massive loss. But what we're actually seeing is this is quite positive because there's a bit of optionality at play here. It either goes one of two ways. The first is that this inflects over time and it starts to become profitable. Or the second is they divest it and it boosts their earnings meaningfully over time.
Okay, great. So in terms of where the stock sits then today, I mean, do we think there's still upside on the numbers? It's obviously had a great run.
Yeah, it's had a fantastic run. I mean, it's gone from under $100 up to, you know, $450 plus. But, you know, this might start to spook the market. But, I mean, when you think it through, in our view, the S&P trades on about 20 times earnings. So we think that at this growth rate, Meta should actually be justified to trade at a premium to that. So if you're trading at 25 times earnings, we believe the company can do $25 of EPS in 2025. The simple math of 25 times 25 gets you to $625. So there is still meaningful upside there.
So we think there's a long runway of growth to come, even on a 12-month forward basis.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Okay, so we've talked a lot about the big cap tech ideas, but another area that we've got a lot of conviction in at the moment is our climate change strategy and our decarbonisation enablers of climate change that we expect to happen over the next 10 to 30 years. And so, Gene, maybe a smaller cap name that we've owned for a while now in our climate leaders portfolio is a company called Nextracker. Do you want to give us a quick overview on, firstly, who Nextracker is, and then maybe why their result was so special?
Yeah, sure. So Nextracker is an interesting little business. It's founder-led, which we love to see at Munro. They are the number one global supplier of solar trackers, which are effectively devices that help solar panels rotate throughout the day in order to maximize and improve energy yield. The business is well known for its multi-terrain solutions designed to overcome and adapt to naturally hilly and uneven landscapes.
Great. And so it doesn't really matter where you put the solar farm.
Exactly.
And so do you want to just quickly touch on why the result was so strong?
As you know, the solar industry has been quite volatile recently for a number of reasons. But Nextracker has been able to consistently outperform industry peers like Array and deliver large beat and raises every quarter since they came to market about a year ago. In the recent quarter, they further raised their earnings guide by over 20% for the year and reported backlogs significantly exceeding $3 billion. This is truly a testament to management's execution, and their competitive advantage really lies in their ability to attract and retain tier one solar developers, as well as the global supply chain they built to align that demand they're seeing in those local markets as well. This not only expands their footprint in international markets, but also helps expand their profit margins since they're manufacturing to supply locally. We think the street has largely mismodeled their growth so far because it's still relatively underdiscovered. And with solar only producing around 5% of the world's electricity today, we see Nextracker having a significant runway for growth, especially with decarbonisation at the forefront of people's minds. Not to mention there's also upside to come being a beneficiary to the IRA, Inflation Reduction Act.
Perfect. And so they haven't yet communicated how the IRA is going to benefit the P&L yet, have they?
Exactly right. Management has, however, quantified some $50 to $80 million savings in cost of sales in the next quarter, and they intend on guiding to the IRA tax benefit for the coming fiscal year as well, which they expect will be much more meaningful to its financials going forward.
Great. So more earnings upside to come from Nextracker, hopefully.
Exactly.
Excellent. And so, Ben, if we jump back to you, another stock that's come back into the portfolio in the last year is Uber, which is obviously has been growing since it first came to market a number of years ago, but the profitability has really gone through a long journey since it IPO'd all those years ago, and that's really changing what's going on with the stock at the moment. So do you want to take us through quickly the result there and what exactly is happening with this profitability now?
Yeah, sure. So I guess what we're seeing is Uber's, for the most of its life, has been unprofitable. And it's only since the middle of last year that that sort of started to tick and we saw that inflection. And I guess a lot of people would sort of start to question why has it been unprofitable for such a long period of time. And that really comes down to the spend that Uber had to sort of, I guess, play out through its IPO and in the early years of its life. And that's because for these gig economies, it's very much a supply-led market. And what I mean by that is Uber needed to go out and get drivers in order to attract people to the platform. And it's pretty costly to do that. So, you know, you had to take people from the taxi industry, you had to take drivers, and you had to incentivize them. And so what we're seeing is once we've hit critical mass of drivers, it's attracting more and more riders to the platform. And basically what I mean by that is it's creating a flywheel of growth.
Okay, so that's a really interesting way to think about this because many people think of Uber as how much demand they're getting from their customers, i.e. the riders and people that want to eat. But actually what makes the model work is more drivers coming to the platform, which in turn drives that flywheel to attract more riders coming to the platform. So it's a supply-driven platform, really.
Absolutely. So I guess if you think about it, if you were to take out your Uber app and you log on and you want to get a ride across town and the wait time's 20 minutes, most people are going to go look for an alternative route, right? So effectively by increasing the supply of drivers, this is going to follow by more people, you know, using the app and getting rides. And what that leads to is the drivers themselves having more earnings power. And what I mean by that is they can close out more trips per hour and earn more for themselves. And then what does that lead to? More drivers coming to the platform. And then that flywheel just goes round and round and round.
Great. That makes a lot of sense. And they also had a recent analyst day or a capital markets day.
They did.
Do you want to just quickly touch on that? And specifically, I think what was really important is the profitability is actually kicking in here.
Yeah. And they really put a framework around this. And I mean, coming into the result, we were sort of thinking that it might be muted. And we knew that could be the case, seeing that this capital markets day was following just a week later. And it turned out to be the perfect catalyst that we hoped for. And effectively what they did was they laid out three important targets that they set for 3 years out till 2026. So the first one was mid to high teens compounded annual growth rate in both their mobility and eats bookings. The second was for their EBITDA to grow in the high 30s to 40%. And the third was to have 90% of their EBITDA flow through to their free cash flow.
Great. So that cash flow generation is really starting to become quite powerful for the model.
It is. And on top of that, they actually announced their inaugural buyback for $7 billion. So this is just a real key, you know, indicator to the market that that profitability is coming through and management are being stewards of capital.
Excellent. Great. And so finally, Dan, you've been sitting here quietly, patiently listening. We're going to move on to one of our biggest areas of interest at the moment, which is high performance computing. And this is all about the semiconductor market. So this is where we think the semiconductor market is going to double in size over the next 10 years, go from roughly half a trillion to a $1 trillion industry. And so a couple of key companies that we hold in that area of interest, or AOI, are ASML and TSMC. And so both of those companies reported quite early in the reporting season. So why don't you take us through the takeaways from those results?
Yeah, sure thing, Kieran. So I'll start with ASML. So just a quick overview here. They're a monopoly on extreme ultraviolet lithography tools. I know that's a bit of a mouthful, but basically they're just used to print the most intricate layers onto a chip. And so the ASML sets up differently to a lot of the stocks in the fund that we've touched on today. Basically because we're standing at the bottom of this S-curve and looking up at this huge structural growth opportunity that we see in AI. And because of this, the market cares more about future indicators of growth than today's earnings themselves. And so Q4 itself was relatively in line, but reported orders were over 9 billion euros versus basically 3.5 billion expected by the market. And so what this is it's customers buying tools in anticipation for production ramps in the back half of this year and into 2025. And ultimately that restores somewhat wavering confidence in the 2025 targets that the ASML set in 2022 of 30 to 40 billion in revenue, and perhaps suggest some upside as we go through the year.
Wow, so 9 billion in orders. So that's effectively their backlog, so to speak, of what's to come potentially for the revenues.
That target I spoke about of 30 to 40 billion, if you annualise that 9 billion, you get pretty much all the way there. And so, yeah, it's really reassuring to see that.
So lots of runway to come for ASML. Great. So maybe just quickly touch on TSMC.
Yep, sure. So TSMC are a customer of ASML. So they buy ASML's tools, and they're the largest semiconductor foundry. So they make the chips or fabricate the chips. And because of this unique position they're in, they're a bit seen as a bit of an industry bellwether. And so their CapEx guidance, which they provided, was which is seen as a strong read-through to the broader market, was good enough at 28 to 32 billion. But the more important thing was, well, for TSMC themselves, was they guided to 2024 revenue growth of above 20%. And so this is underpinned by basically two points. The first one being the broadest semiconductor end market passing it through their cyclical trough. And so if you think about PCs and smartphones, when we all worked from home during COVID and bought PCs, obviously your PC, you don't need to buy a new PC every year. And so there is a cyclical downturn as inventory levels digest and demand sort of comes back. And all the companies are telling us that we're past that low point now. And so that's the first driver for revenue. But the second one is basically, when you're selling these new PCs and smartphones, you're required to run these new AI applications on them. And so that requires substantially higher amounts of semiconductor content per PC or per smartphone. And so you have units and content per unit growing in the same way or moving in the same way. And so that's really positive for growth. The other thing I just add is they revised up their AI processor revenue expectations for the second time in the space of two quarters. So that just speaks to how quickly this new AI wave is developing for them. And essentially, I mean, if you just look at their growth profile, 15 to 20% revenue growth with earnings growing faster than that. Ultimately, it's probably the cheapest way to play the AI thematic at under 20 times earnings.
Excellent. So just help us understand that CapEx point of view. So the CapEx for them is effectively an indication of how much the industry is going to grow over the next 12 months.
Exactly. So companies like ASML, which you just touched on, that their revenue ultimately stems from companies like TSMC's CapEx. So the money they'll spend buying the semiconductor equipment tools, so the EUV tools that I mentioned, and then there's obviously a lot of companies within that space that have a positive read through from what TSMC provided.
Great. So let's finally touch on the much anticipated NVIDIA result, which is only just recently. And they're actually a January year-end company. So they reported obviously late in the earnings cycle, but as I said, much anticipated. So Dan, why don't you just talk us through it? There's some pretty big numbers in here, but help us understand exactly how the data center division came in.
Yeah, sure. So I'll try to keep it brief here, but basically this is the third quarter in the row where NVIDIA's hit it out of the park. And so just really briefly, so they printed over $22 billion in revenue, which is up 265% year on year and 10% above the previous guide. But what people were really interested in was their guidance for the next quarter, which came in above the street expectations and was $24 billion in revenue, which they expect next quarter. So apart from these staggeringly big numbers, the biggest takeaway from the result is that despite the size of these numbers, data center revenues, so think these H100 chips that we're talking about and Ben's mentioned before, they'll continue to grow quarter on quarter through 2024. And the reason this is so important is because throughout 2023, there were concerns and probably reasonable concerns growing that numbers were getting so big. So if you just think about Q4 of the most recent quarter and the year before, revenue's grown from 6 to 22 billion in 1 year. And so people were basically questioning the ability for NVIDIA to grow sustainably, i.e. are we going to have a flat or down year somewhere down the track? And so the first point was Jensen Huang, the CEO and co-founder of NVIDIA, blatantly said that demand will exceed supply throughout the whole of 2024, despite them continuing to add to capacity throughout the year. Another thing to note is their new chip, the H200, is coming to market in the second quarter and sells at a substantially higher ASP. But I mean, more fundamentally, we actually came out of the call with more confidence in AI demand beyond the cloud providers like Microsoft and Amazon, who have been buying up a lot of these chips. And some of the sound bites that NVIDIA provided were really useful about the uses of AI. So Ben spoke about Meta. So obviously the social media and advertising markets are able to drive engagement through the use of AI. Healthcare is streamlining drug discovery through the use of AI. Automotive industry is basically creating AI factories for autonomous driving systems. And financial services, so I mean, they mentioned that Amex is using AI for fraud detection. And so the key conclusion of this is as AI proliferates through everything, pretty much everything that we do, companies need to buy more and more NVIDIA GPUs. And on the point of sustainability, all these customers, so Meta and Microsoft who are selling Copilot, they're all realizing a return on these NVIDIA GPUs through an improved offering or through some productivity benefits. And so as long as this remains to be true, we think demands is sustainable for NVIDIA, and we're very, very confident in sequential revenue and earnings growth into 2024 and beyond, which continues to be underestimated by the market.
Great. So out of the result, we're increasingly confident that they're not going to have this big demand cliff, if you like, or this big gap between supply and demand after their 2024 year, because the fear has been that all this demand has been pulled forward to today effectively.
Basically, what we learn is there's a lot more people than just the cloud providers buying GPUs today.
Excellent. And then the other point on NVIDIA is that most people think it's an expensive stock. How does the numbers stack up in terms of evaluation?
Well, look, it's very difficult because this year especially the numbers are growing so quickly, right? The question that I've heard Nick ask people is, was NVIDIA more expensive at 60 times at $200 or 30 times today at over $750? And it's a bit of a trick question, but it was obviously cheaper back when it was 60 times earnings. And so we value stocks looking out on a 5-year view and a blended forward view. And we see the valuation is still compelling given the growth that NVIDIA is providing or we expect them to provide in the next 5 years.
Yeah, and I think if our earnings estimate for this year, I think it's around $30. Is that correct?
Yeah, just shy of, yeah.
So around $30. And if you use the share price of roughly $780 roughly where it closed last night, we get to a PE of sort of mid-20s, which again is not a huge premium to the market at just over 20 times at the moment.
Exactly right. Well, not a huge premium for basically the cornerstone of the AI revolution. So,
great. Well, that's NVIDIA. So, Dan, maybe last question to you. We've recently launched, obviously, the new small mid-cap fund. We've got a number of high-performance computing enablers in that fund. Maybe just touch on one that you think was really impressive coming out of the Q4 results season.
Yeah, thanks. So maybe the way I'll frame this is if you think back to 2000 or in the 2000s and you pulled apart the iPhone and invested in the components that made up the iPhone, it would have created a lot of attractive investment opportunities. And so when we look at the NVIDIA H100 supply chain, we found all these small companies or smaller cap companies that are benefiting from the exact same trends that NVIDIA are. And so one of them is called Onto Innovation. And so one of these components of the NVIDIA H100 is an advanced memory unit called high bandwidth memory, which is basically just memory stacked on top of one another. And so basically by increasing the bandwidth, you can increase the chip performance. And this is really, really important for training large language models for AI. And so what Onto do is they sell tools to inspect the chip interconnects. So they're interconnected through these mini micro bumps and they check them for defects. So cracking, uniformity, if there are any missing, et cetera. And so why this is now more important is firstly with greater chip complexity. So the H100 has over 35,000 parts. You need more inspection steps, so you check more things, and so you buy more Onto tools. Another point is with more interconnects per wafer, so more of those little bumps, when you improve the interconnection, you need a greater testing requirement, so you buy more Onto tools. The last one is as the chips become more valuable, so Kieran mentioned before that NVIDIA H100 is about $20,000 or US dollars. It's the tools, Onto's tools play a much more critical role to ensure there's no defect. You don't want to be throwing these sort of chips out. And so as a result, you buy more tools. And so we see them as exposed to the exact same trends as NVIDIA and a lot of these companies sitting within the AI bucket. And they obviously reported recently very, very strong in this high bandwidth memory and high performance compute segment. And as I mentioned with ASML, the AI-driven orders remain strong. That's a name we really like in the SMID space.
So basically what's also happening here is that chips are getting bigger, aren't they? So yep. You're putting the CPU, the GPU together, which is effectively is accelerated computing type architecture, but you're also putting what you said is the high bandwidth memory. So memory stacked on top of each other. Mm-hmm. You're putting those three elements together. And so you're basically building a bigger chip. Yep. And so that's where the importance of an Onto comes in to see how all the components on that chip are interacting and making sure there's less latency, basically.
Exactly. Exactly right.
Great. So overall, a really strong reporting season for the Munro funds and obviously a credit to the three of you here for all the hard work you've done. But I think what's really important is that the stocks are really actually reflecting our earnings forecasts and where we think those investment cases are taking them to over the medium term. And in a lot of cases, we still think many of our companies and still convicted that many of our companies can really double the earnings over the next 5 years or double their earnings profile over the next 5 years. And despite the fact that, yes, the market has performed well and yes, that some of the stocks have done well, we still think that long-term runway is very much intact. So, guys, thanks very much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Kieran.